The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Timothy Harvey, and I am sitting across from Mr. Jason Hunt.
What?
It's true. You're what? Right there. Unless I've gone mad.
No.
No? You mean I'm sane? Oh, God.
No.
Okay, fair enough. Interestingly enough, we are going to discuss madness this evening.
Spoilers.
Just got to get that in there right at the beginning.
Because we are going to talk about the final two episodes of Doctor Who Season 8, Dark Water and War in Heaven, close enough, Death in Heaven. War in Heaven is, I think, one of the Faction Paradox stories from that ran out of the Virgin Doctor Who line.
What season is this really?
Well, let's see. Wait, was it
27, I think, plus now 8. So we're in season 35,
something
technically.
Like that, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's all right then, isn't it? That's kind of cool. So there's a lot that happened in the last two episodes of Doctor Who.
Yes.
There is a very interesting, somewhat controversial question of the afterlife raised.
And for those of you who have not seen the episodes yet, why not?
Yeah, come on, guys.
I posted on Facebook, what did you think of the Doctor Who finale? Because it was late Saturday night when I posted it.
Sure.
And people are saying, oh, well, this, and this. No, wait. Wait, not yet. It's too soon. So I had to take the post down.
Because,
suddenly there was all of these spoilers. No, we can't do that yet. So
yeah, it took you a day to post my tweet that I posted like hours before it aired here in the States.
I was so behind on so many different things.
That's all right. Fair enough. The tweet I sent out was, I've been doing a one sentence review for the last several episodes of Doctor Who on Twitter and on Facebook, just because I'm through the wonderful modern invention of the interwebs, I'm actually able to watch the episode actually kind of halfway in between when it airs in the UK and halfway between when it airs here. And so a couple hours before it's been airing, I've been posting a one sentence review, and this week's for the actual final episode of the season was "It Might Just Break Your Hearts," which was a pun that apparently no one really got. So because it could play either way, and I think people just took the obvious one as opposed to the two hearts thing. So yeah, I'm not as funny as I think I am sometimes. I'm really not that funny.
It's okay. We like you anyway.
No, you don't. You just tolerate me. I understand. So anyway, this was a very interesting season. And it led to a resolution that I've been looking online, of course, because Jason and I do this. We go and we look out at what the rest of the world is talking about when we are talking about some of this stuff. And DoctorWhoTV.com, mm-hmm. Okay? They are a fantastic site for all things Doctor Who.
This is not officially affiliated with the show. This is
no, but they but they site, are but right? They are about as close as you can get to. I mean, they are like one step over from the BBC.
Right.
They have got so many inns.
They're like just off Broadway.
They are. Yeah, they are. They are very lucky folks. They have they get so much advanced information. I want to be them when I grow up. Which is not going
to
happen.
We need to recruit somebody from there.
That would be great.
Or form a partnership.
There we go. So they have got, they have been in many ways my go-to place for stuff that is popping up before it like hits the American. And literally, this happens all the time where you're looking at like, say, IO9. Mm-hmm. You get this like, oh, hey, look, this is information. I'm like, I had that yesterday. I posted that on Facebook yesterday because I got it from, but
I love scooping IO9.
I do too. And we love the folks over at IO9. They're great. But still, it's always nice to beat. They're bigger than we are. It's nice to beat the bigger ones. So anyway, last night I looked at the comment threads and there's a couple over at DoctorWhoTV.com. From the review, from the episode itself, they have a rate and discuss where they allow spoilers. And they also have, they have a Doctor Who Extra, which is their
behind the scenes
thing. And so the comment fields are very, very interesting. And honestly, this is another one of those episodes, the last two episodes really, That fans are just split right down the middle.
Yeah, there's no gray middle or anything. It's, why did they do that? Moffat!
Yeah.
You know, all the Moffat hate.
I'm seeing people rating it 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10. Loved the episode. Mm-hmm. Favorite season finale yet. Now, I wouldn't go that far. There's a lot of real joys to be had in these final two episodes. There are some problems to me, and this all comes down to something that, you know, 1,000 times you've heard me say on here: story, story, story.
Right.
But it's interesting because this season hasn't really been about story. Not really.
Well, not story so much as an overriding story arc, but the stories that are told play into, like, what we were talking about before we started recording, character arcs.
Yeah.
Where we're seeing more development of each individual character, the Doctor, Clara, Danny, Missy, throughout the season, all culminating in these last two episodes. And some of it does play back to last season with Clara and the Impossible Girl, mm-hmm. and her being sent toward the Doctor so they intersect in their lives and that sort of thing. So nice little cameo by Matt Smith in the finale.
Several nice little cameos in the finale. From just pieces of the episodes. I mean, it actually was one of those things where you have this go back.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Moffat does like to connect things to the past. And for good or for ill, a lot of us older fans who remember the original series have loved the fact this season has had a lot of callbacks to the original series.
Oh, yeah. And there were quite a few in this one.
Yeah. And it was one of those things. I don't know. This episode was full of so many great moments, big and small.
Mm-hmm.
And some real stumbling blocks for a lot of people. I mean, you have to, you know, again, we're spoilers big time. If you haven't watched these two episodes, why are you listening to this podcast?
Because they love us.
Well, there's that, obviously. Yes. But you're pause us, go watch the two episodes, come back, we'll wait.
You know, if there were people in real life that had a pause button, I would be hitting it quite a bit with some people.
That's true.
But
Well, okay, let's take this in a couple of big chunks, okay? Because some of the stuff you have to deal with in big chunks.
Yes.
Melissa Gomez.
Okay.
Is the master, or the mistress in this particular case, or Missy?
Mm-hmm. I was really disappointed in that reveal.
I wasn't, but I also knew that as much as there was a lot of fan cry out for the Ronnie, okay, which would have actually been a really interesting character to bring back, but for modern audiences who are not familiar with the original series, it would have been a who, what,
or huh? I was hoping for Romana, because after she described, you know, when the Doctor says, "Who are you?"
Right,
he already knows that she's from Gallifrey because she's got two hearts,
mm-hmm.
she's got access to Time Lord technology. Yep. There's all of that. K-9 called Romana mistress,
right,
on a regular basis.
Sure.
So
he also called the Doctor the master
for everybody.
So.
Yes, but the clues, and then her talking about being abandoned, being left behind,
right,
for dead. I was like, that doesn't sound like the master. That
right.
wasn't the last time we saw the master. Was not in circumstances that would exactly fit that
sure
characterization. So I thought, oh, okay, maybe this is Moffat's cheat. Maybe this is his way of bringing back Romana,
mm-hmm.
in a way that people go, "Who?
Right.
Wait, what?" And then take next season and play out what happened to Romana and the back and forth. And now you've got two opposing factors working on the whole finding Gallifrey thing.
Sure.
Because Romana has been outside of all of that as well. She wasn't on Gallifrey. You know, she was...
Well, actually, Okay.
Let's qualify.
Well, we do have to qualify. Because in Night of the Doctor, when we had the return of the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann came back. He name-checked a whole bunch of characters from the audiobooks.
Right.
Okay? And strictly speaking, Paul McGann is the longest-running Doctor because he's been making audiobooks longer than any other character played the part.
And those audiobooks are technically now canon.
Technically, at least a good chunk of them are canon.
Right.
There is a series of audiobooks produced by the same company, which may or may not be canon now, that deal with Romana. Going back to Gallifrey, Romana and Leela. So you actually have Lala Ward and Louise Jameson. They're really, really good, but they're very complicated. If you know the characters from the original series, because they're politics.
Yeah.
Because Romana becomes president of Gallifrey. And depending again in the book line, in the Virgin book line, as the war in time was happening, and the BBC line, various times have been various time wars. Romana went darker. She went a lot darker because there was a whole period where basically reality was warping. And so literally Gallifrey was changing and the people on it were shifting too. So it was a very, timey-wimey, really interesting stuff. But anyway, so we have audiobooks that basically have her as president of Gallifrey dealing with a lot of different things, including negotiations with the Daleks and things like that. And the Doctor's brother, Irving Brixtel,
mm-hmm.
who appeared first in the audiobooks and has never appeared on television and never been... But again, the audiobooks, a lot of the audiobooks have become canon. So depending on what...
Well, let's back up a second. We're assuming that they've become canon simply because 8 name-checked...
A whole bunch of the companions from the audiobooks.
Doesn't necessarily mean those particular adventures are canon.
Right. But, I didn't think we'd get Romana back. Not like this. I would love to see her come back. I'd love to see because the character is a lot of fun because she's a great foil for the Doctor.
Yeah.
Because she's like him. She's on his side. But I was half expecting something that didn't happen this episode that I would have just loved to have seen.
Which is?
When the show was in the dark, empty time, the great hiatus.
The wilderness years.
The wilderness years. They did a online animated 9th Doctor adventure called Scream of the Shulka.
Hmm.
And it was supposed to be, the BBC was actually going to do it as this was going to be the future of Doctor Who. It was going to be an animated online series. It's a very interesting episode. You can still find it online. And then, of course, they decided to bring the TV show back.
Right.
So it completely just stopped. So it's a one-off, right? In the episode, you discover that the Doctor has a passenger on the TARDIS. And it's the Master. And he's trapped in the TARDIS. And he's basically a disembodied spirit in a mechanical body that looks just like the Master. But he can't leave the TARDIS.
Hmm.
And he is the Doctor's sort of prisoner slash companion slash evil conscience slash... and it's a really interesting dynamic. And it's something that was a very, you really want to see where they would, where it would have gone.
Right.
I was kind of hoping at the end of the episode, before we got to where we went, is that we'd had this period where the Master and the Doctor were stuck together. Because I really liked the dynamic. I really liked the way they played off each other. Michelle Gomez is a wonderful actress. She's a lot of fun. And this version of the Master, the Mistress Missy, whatever you want to call her.
Right.
Was very much Anthony Ainley crossed with John Sim. And for those of you who don't know who Anthony Ainley is, he was the 4th actor to play the Master. The late, great Roger Delgado, and unfortunately Anthony Ainley's dead as well. But the character originally the role was Roger Delgado.
Who passed away unexpectedly.
Very unfortunately. In fact, the big reveal, they had to change the final episode of the 3rd Doctor's run because the big reveal was supposed to be that the Master and the Doctor were brothers. that was the that was always the subtext and the plan is that right. they were two sides of the same coin. It was a battle of family.
And of course, it always works. It works even with them being former best friends.
Oh, sure.
But the brother dynamic would have added another dimension to mm-hmm. it, certainly.
And the idea was that the master was actually going to die saving the doctor, that he was going to sacrifice himself because at the end, family, right?
Sure. Love always wins.
Love always wins, which, of course, is another thing we can talk about in a little bit.
Yep.
But Richard Grant played the doctor in Scream of the Shulka, by the way. And Derek Jacobi was the master. Hey, wait a minute. Didn't he play the master in the TV show?
Yes, he did.
So that's where he actually got his start playing the master in the one real animated Doctor episode.
Sir Derek Jacobi.
That's also true. Yes. Sophie Okonedo? Okonedo? She played Liz 10. Yeah, she was in it as well. So it was kind of a, let's bring these folks back and put them on screen in almost different parts. But I believe David Tennant had a small role in it as well.
Could be, yeah.
So anyway.
Yes, David Tennant played the caretaker.
Yes. So you have this, there's a very interesting thing going on in this episode with bringing back the master and bringing back kind of the dark flip side of the doctor. And the way they played it out with this was actually one of my favorite parts of the entire storyline was the reason what she wanted. Because at the end, it's basically she just wants her friend back. And she wants her friend to be like her. Or to be like him. And there's always been this interesting dynamic between the doctor and the master where there's this especially in the third doctor, fourth doctor years, it was a chess match. It was two people who respected each other very, very much playing a very, very dangerous and deadly game.
Yes.
And then you get into the John Sim, David Tennant interaction, and they were very. John Sim was in version of the Master, who actually was really divided fans. A lot of them did not like the crazy.
I wasn't too keen on
the crazy, funny, twisted version.
I always, because the Master for me, it was always more appealing as a character when he was diabolical, mm-hmm. when he was the mustache
was
twisting yeah. and, yeah, the chess, mm-hmm. like you say with the third and fourth. That whole scheme thing. Mm-hmm. thing. And then when Sim came back and he was just nuts, just a raving lunatic. This is not the Master. This is somebody else. This is somebody pretending to be the Master. This is not the Master. Now, Michelle Gomez brings that scheming mm-hmm. dynamic back with a little bit of crazy, not as crazy as John Sim, but I wasn't too big of a fan of the whole four beats drum thing that the Master kept hearing
oh, sure.
up until, mm-hmm. you know, from when he was a kid anyway. I thought that's just too much. But the full-blown maniac that we got during Ten's run
right.
was just not consistent with that character as much as
right.
you look at everybody's portrayal of the Master over the years from Delgado forward, and they all are of a piece. They're all a certain style of character. And I know a lot of that is the writing.
Mm-hmm.
But Sim brought a completely different take on it.
Sure.
And yeah, you're right. There were a lot of people that did not like it at all. But I think it's probably also the first time that you probably get people shipping the Doctor and the Master, you know, because there was...
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. There were fanzines back in the 70s. I'm sure there was a whole set of them.
But there was an undercurrent between Tennant and Sim. There was an undercurrent there of that kind of, not necessarily a romantic connection between them, but they were playing to that a little bit more than you saw in past incarnations.
Well, oh yeah, but I think some of this, I think that's something that's changed in the culture. I think that
but that changes the dynamic between the characters.
Well, sure it does, but I think that there was also a sense because they were the last two. Mm-hmm. That when you get to the end of, oh, for heaven's sakes, what's the name of the episode where he dies the first time before Gallifrey comes back and we get the end of time what is it?
Which Doctor?
10th.
It's where
the Master becomes the Prime Minister and...
Oh, right. Oh.
Anyway, the end of that episode, we'll remember the title in a minute. You know, they're the last two, and he's dying in his arms. He's like, don't die, because if he's gone, then the Doctor is alone again. And so I think that you end up, I think for the type of fan who would really want to go with the shipping thing between the two characters, it's moments like that. But I think it's less about a romantic thing than it is about not wanting to be alone and, you know, being the last of your kind and having that last...
Are you talking about Last of the Time Lords? Or Sound of the Drums? I think one led to the other, right? Then you have the two-part The End of Time.
Right. So I think Last of the Time Lords.
Okay.
But here, even though we have a male doctor and a female master... and there's all kinds of just throwaway lines about my boyfriend and all these things. There is nothing sexual about this relationship. Right. I mean, the dialogue is being thrown back and forth. But you look at the two of them and you listen to the subtext of everything they're saying. The Master's not in love with the Doctor in a romantic sense. And even though, you know, she kisses him and he kisses her at one point. Toward the end of this, it's not a, you know, now that I'm a woman, I want to jump your bones kind of thing.
Those are calculated moves.
Oh, yeah. On both parts.
Yeah.
And the Master being the Master, as the mistress, certainly going to play it up. You know, it's a game. The whole thing's a game.
Yeah.
Which
is a nice callback to the original.
Exactly. Exactly. But at the same time, you have that emotional impact where they were friends. They had a friendship that mattered,
mm-hmm.
and they're both lonely. We've seen time and time again the Doctor is very lonely,
right?
And the idea that the Master would be lonely too.
Well, that goes without saying because they're the last of their kind. Mm-hmm. Except for the Romana and the Ronnie and whoever else
might have lived, but there. And that's another part of the episode. One of the scenes that, it hurt a lot of people online, and it's a great scene. I loved it, but it felt like for all the emotional stabs, there's a lot of emotional stabs in this episode.
There are a lot of them.
There's one of them toward the end, and we'll talk about it in a little bit because I want to go into it in longer time than we're going to have before we go to break. But it's the last lie she tells him,
mm-hmm.
Which is I watched that scene and went, oh, that's so good. That's just so good. But we're gonna take a break here in a minute because we have to talk about our sponsor.
Yes.
And superherostuff.com.
That's right.
But when we come back, we still have a lot to talk about. We've got the afterlife. We've got the Brigadier. We've got Danny and Clara. We've got the new doctor.
Don't forget the female doctor.
The female doctor. The great new opening credits.
That was fun.
That was awesome. But there's a lot to talk about. And I think Jason and I'll both give our verdict on this one. Cause I think fans are like everything else. They're pretty divided. So we're going to take a minute, go get some more coffee and let you guys grab something to drink and listen to this wonderful spot from superherostuff.com. The folks who have all sorts of cool, amazing stuff there. Doctor Who stuff.
They do, yes.
They do, and all kinds of things from, well, superheroes, hence the name, superherostuff.com. We'll be back, folks.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio, where all of us are madmen in a box.
The That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker here, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Sci-Fi for Me crew every week as we dive into the details of the TV shows that you and we love. Did you miss your favorite show this week? Or perhaps you need someone to talk to about that latest plot twist and the implications. Well, maybe your friends don't geek out over shows like Supernatural, Grimm, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like what your friends over at Sci-Fi for Me do, but hey, it's what we live for. So join us for the latest at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Back on H2O, Timothy Harvey, Jason Hunt.
Hello.
You get to figure out which one is which. Now, we have a timer in the studio.
Do we do?
Normally, it runs about 25 minutes just to keep us on track.
Sure.
I have a feeling, though, that with as much as we're going to discuss...
We may go a little bit long.
So just to throw that out there. And I'm also going to do this again.
Spoilers.
Because we are talking... Whoop. Nope. Don't want to hit it twice. We are talking the finale of Season 8 of Doctor Who.
We are.
And the new Doctor, what do you think of the new Doctor?
Well, she's not as tall as I would have thought.
She's certainly spunky.
She is spunky indeed. What we're talking about, of course, is the fact that when we come back, the cold open is the Cybermen closing in on Clara. And as he's getting ready to shoot her, she whips around and goes, "You can't shoot me because I'm the Doctor." And the credits go in, and the first thing you see is Jenna Coleman.
I know, that was funny. And then Peter Capaldi's.
And then her eyes come on the screen.
And it's already a GIF.
Oh yeah.
Online.
Because I mean, there was a there has been a fan criticism of the series that it's been basically the Clara Who show. That basically this has been too much about, this season's been too much about Clara.
Well, and that's a common complaint from, I want to say, new Whovians who don't understand that a lot of times in classic Who, the show has been about the companion.
Sure.
More than it is about the Doctor.
I think so much, especially when you have a new Doctor there, I think people were really expecting it to be, you know, but it really was. This whole season has been a character arc for the Doctor, for Clara, for Danny. But basically it being as much about Clara's domestic life and her own clashes with the Doctor over the course of the season.
Plus the fact that as we've gone through the season, she has become more and more like the Doctor. We even saw with Flatline, she essentially becomes the Doctor in function. Rather than being the tag-along, she's driving the story more than the Doctor is up through a certain point.
And this has been
another one of those hate it or love it things.
Right. And I think that what you end up with is a different take on how the show's... Again, this show's been very experimental this season.
Yeah.
And it was... Moffat has certainly not been afraid to experiment with the format of the show. And I think some fans have appreciated that, and some fans have sat there and gone, "No, what are you doing? Oh, Moffat, you're evil. Curse you and the day you were born, Moffat." Yes. Frankly, as a storyteller myself, I like the fact that he's experimenting. Does he always get it right? No, of course not.
Well, and I like the fact also that some of his experimenting actually acknowledges the fan complaints about what he does over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
And he comes in and says, "Okay, yes, I do this a lot. Let me twist it a little bit." And,
right.
And we've seen a lot of that this season as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it. You know, I don't – and we've talked about this before. I don't get the Moffat hate. I mean, on certain
either.
Levels I do, but I think no matter who's running the show – I mean, Davey's got his share of flack. Moffat gets his share. You go back to John Nathan Turner. Everybody. Anybody sure. that's running this show is going to get that.
Well, it's a loyal, engaged, passionate fan base.
Even more so now that there's the internet.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, back in the day, it was fanzines and it was conventions and things like that.
Right.
You got to hear this stuff play out in panels or in the pages of a fanzine. But now it's instant. It's all bam, 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 bam.
And it's unfiltered.
And it's unfiltered.
And it's unfocused. And a lot of it is not considered before it's released to the world.
Well, and that's a generalized problem with the internet. God forbid you go to a political website and just watch the vitriol.
Well, and we've talked about this before about how the internet makes you stupid. You can see that you can listen to that in the archives.
Yeah.
Because we've actually talked about this. We did a whole episode one time on the internet and how it affects manners and behavior
The problem. I don't think we're actually designed to be instant feedback.
No,
we don't. I mean, as a civilized,
it's easy to dish it out. It's not easy to take it.
Right.
And that's where the disconnect happens with the internet, because you can just put it out there and there are no consequences, except there are.
Yeah, because I mean, people, you know, you can say whatever you like, but don't expect anyone to not respond and criticize you for saying it.
But I did think that was interesting that Moffat had taken a lot of those criticisms and incorporated them said, okay, fine, we're going to address some of those.
Well, I mean,
the season.
Clara Who, by basically putting her at the beginning of the credits, that's a clear, we know what you're thinking. We know what your criticism is here.
But it was fun.
It was fun. Well, and I think there are a couple of things.
Well, and I think that too. Also, it's classic horror movie setup, because you have the fun and the wink and the ha 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 and then ha,
right?
You know, reach out and grab you and something horrible.
It's the sting.
Happens.
It's the sting.
Yeah, yeah, and we got a lot of that, especially in the second half.
Oh yes,
with the demise of Osgood.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. We were big fans of Osgood.
It was fun when Unit showed up and surrounded them, and he goes, a bow tie? She said, bow ties are cool.
No, he said, nice tie.
Ah.
And she said, bow ties are cool.
So she's clearly moved on from four.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, she hung out with 11, and 11's pretty, you know, 11 is pretty awesome. Well, and there's a couple things. Let's talk about Unit for a second. We get Kate Stewart back.
Yes.
And for the first bit of appearances of Unit, we get the Unit that we want, which is the efficient, controlled, jump in there, control, you know, take command of the situation. You know, the master, the mistress thinks she's got everything all under control, and all of a sudden, bam, all the civilians aren't civilians. It's it's Unit going, ha-ha.
Yes. And that was fun.
And then facing off against the Cybermen. And basically, you know, up until the point they jet up into the air, you know, coming out and throwing the Cybermen head down in front of them.
Oh, that was fun. Because that was a classic Cyberman head.
It was a classic. It was invasion. It was the invasion. It's from the second Doctor episode.
Which is where the Cybermen came down from St. Paul's.
Right.
Before.
Right. Yeah. And it did answer a question about that scene basically did answer a question about one of the issues that I had, that I knew they were going to answer it, but it's one of those things that stood out, is that everything that was inside 3W would not fit in St. Paul's. Okay, clearly it was a transdimensional
thing. Bigger on the inside.
Bigger on the inside. So that was nice that it was acknowledged. Unfortunately, once they get on the plane, Unit has two guards who are apparently... went to the same school as the stormtroopers, because these two guys...
They may have failed that school.
I think these two guys got Osgood killed, and I think that they blew up in the plane, and good. They deserved it. Because unfortunately, as neat as the scene is, where Osgood and the mistress are playing off each other and having that But and you actually get a death that is cruel.
Yeah.
Which is, honestly, you know, as much as it's a weird thing to say, you need that from the Master.
Well, yeah, because despite everybody knowing who the Master is, mm-hmm. and we all know that he's evil and yada, 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 we haven't seen him in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And John Sims' incarnation was not, like we've talked about, not the scheming, totally evil, dastardly, wicked, terrible person. He was just nuts.
Yeah.
And Moffat's even said, you have to establish with somebody's death, mm-hmm. that the Master can go this far. And yeah, it's bad to see that Osgood didn't make it out. But of course, you've already got speculation online saying, well, maybe that wasn't Osgood. Maybe that was the shapeshifter as Osgood that got killed, and the real Osgood is down still in unit.
Well, actually,
or vice versa.
There is an out. And
then, of course, this being time travel.
But there was that wonderful fun bit where the Doctor says, all of time and space.
Put it on your bucket list.
And it's just like, because he recognized it. He recognized her, that she would have made a good companion.
Yep.
And that's always one of the things that both Davies and Moffat has done, is they've given us a good companion, someone who could be a good companion. And then they've yanked them away, and we've lost them because they've died, and it's a tragedy. So yes, there's some really great stuff with UNIT. Now, some interesting stuff that comes out of UNIT, of course, is to play on the whole theme of the soldier that ran throughout the season.
Right.
And you actually see a couple of contrasting things. One, you see the Doctor acknowledging the picture of Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart. And
that was a nice touch.
That was a nice touch. Yeah. But
did it seem out of place to have a portrait of the Brigadiers on the President's plane on boat one? And that's a weird
No, because it's UNIT. I mean, it's a UNIT plane, okay. and honestly, it didn't bother me. But I've gone blank on the name of the character who was the Indian
Man Scout.
Yeah, Man Scout. You get this. Really, again, it's that condescending, you know. Which, interestingly enough, there's this interesting dynamic that with the Doctor and soldiers all season long, which has been really very, very curious. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things played out in the course of this that made me. One thing that I think the problem for every soldier, the Doctor's issues with soldiers are the ones who just obey the order.
Yeah.
He wants them to question. He wants them to question him. He wants them to question the orders, because he's been a soldier, and he's been, as much as he said otherwise at the end, he's been an officer. And Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, his friend, is the soldier who questioned. But he keeps encountering soldiers who just do as they're told. And he's comparing all of these soldiers to the Brigadier. And they're always going to come up wanting.
Right.
That's what's to me, that's what's happening here, is that he's always sitting there going, are you as good? You know, could you rise to the occasion the way that this man could? And which is completely unfair.
But, you know, that's the Doctor.
But that's what we do. But that's what people do. Now, I've seen, and I think I've talked about this as well in the course of the reviews, but we see a lot of people sitting there going, well, you know, Danny calls him on it. Danny. But there's also a problem with Danny's argument. And I'm listening to, Danny as a Cyberman is tragic, and it's played out really well.
Yes,
but there's a big, big problem with Danny's argument that this is what the Doctor is. He's the officer who orders people to death.
Right.
Okay. That's what officers are for. He's criticizing the Doctor for being a necessary part of the military. You have soldiers, you have officers.
Right. But I think Danny's argument also is the fact that the people that travel with the Doctor are not signing up to be soldiers. They're not signing up to be cannon fodder. And I think Danny's criticism of the Doctor is less he's an aristocrat, he's an officer, is more that
he doesn't want to get his hands dirty.
Yeah, he doesn't want to get his hands dirty.
Except we know that's not true. We know the doctor doesn't.
From Danny's perspective, though,
sure. Oh, sure. But the same. But the thing is that Danny's own argument from Danny's own perspective is flawed, because accusing someone of being the officer, of being, you know, the general,
right?
That's what generals are for. That's what officers are for. The officer's job is to order the soldier into battle.
Right.
And so, I mean, emotionally, Danny's argument is very accurate. But from a purely I'm a soldier perspective, looking at criticizing the doctor for being for the doctor doing what he's quote unquote supposed to do,
it may be a little bit different if everybody was wearing a uniform, but they're not.
Sure.
But they're all civilians, and Danny recognizes that these are people who don't have any training.
But you know what? Every single one of these people is making a choice. Clara is making a choice to do this.
Right.
Amy and Rory were making a choice. Rose was making a choice. They're all making a choice, and they are choosing to be what the doctor is asking them
Speaking
to be.
Speaking of Amy and Rory.
I was really thinking I was going to see their gravestones.
Yeah. A lot of people were thinking.
I know. And that would have been.
Because if you have the Brigadier as a Cyberman at the end, then you also have. Well, there's the possibility, because they did say that the pollination was not affecting everybody.
Right, not yet.
So you have this possibility that Rory and Amy didn't get affected, but you've got Rory and Amy, Jamie, Zoe. How are the many of them? But
some of these bodies wouldn't have been there, because Amy and Rory would have been in New York.
Right. Still.
Still in New York.
Still.
Right.
Cybermen.
I know.
You
know,
the possibility of the pawns being Cybermen.
And this becomes one of the questions that came up is that, you know, what about religion? Doctor Who has done a really good job, because it's not meant to be a social commentary show, not really.
Right.
It has moments of it, of course. They stay away from religion. We've had demons in the past. We had the Beast. With the 10th Doctor, we had the 3rd Doctor had the episode, The Demons. There's been, demonic figures have popped up. Usually there's been a science fiction explanation.
Mm-hmm.
The 10th Doctor interaction with a creature that was basically from before this universe, so it could have had a religious, it could have been a actual demon.
Right.
But it's been, you know, so here you have this thing where it's like, well, Doctor Who is saying that the afterlife isn't real, and it's spitting in the face of religion. It's like, no.
I got that the Doctor doesn't quite believe in an afterlife. There's one, but that's a character piece.
That's not
a show thing. And it's established in this particular story that the Nethersphere is not really an afterlife.
No, it's a hijacking.
Yeah.
So basically what the mistress has done here is as people have died, she's gone through and whatever it is that survives, the soul, the consciousness, whatever it is, she's basically gone, mine, and derailed whatever natural order they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we do get that there is a natural order that got hijacked in the reveal at the end.
Right.
Where Danny sends the kitty killed back through, you know,
right.
one trip.
The Nethersphere is coming apart, and the implication, and there's a lot of things that are implications in this episode. The implication is that they're going to go on to where they're supposed to go, wherever they're supposed to go on.
Right. So there's a suggestion that an afterlife is still a possibility.
Right.
But we're just not going to address it because it's not part of the story.
Right. And quite frankly, you know, I don't think any of us really want Doctor Who to come out and sit there and go, you know, this is really heaven.
Yeah.
You know, because Doctor Who isn't for any one set of believers. It's for everybody. You know,
it's got a fan base
all over the world.
Right. But if you also take a stance on a particular version of heaven, then the show is going to be that kind of show and not
right.
everybody.
Right. And you don't want that.
Yeah, you don't want to put yourself in that kind of a niche.
No. And I would have liked a little more spelling out. Some of this stuff, though, there's a lot of dialogue that goes by very, very fast.
That's been a common complaint this season, is mm-hmm. that people are talking so fast, you've got to have the closed captioning on to know what everybody's saying.
Or do what I do, which is watch the episode over and over and over again. So, but it's still...
Which is why your recaps take a week to... Wait, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you did. it's also true. Yeah. But yeah, it's... There's a lot happening.
Yeah.
And this episode was a little bit longer for that very reason. It's like 10 minutes longer than normal.
And I'm glad they didn't cut it in the U.S.
No, no, I am too. I think there's just... you end up with a lot of things happening and a lot of things happening with characters that... It's for a show that isn't necessarily hitting you with the kind of, say, story arc as, say, Lost or 24 or whatever,
right.
It's demanding your attention. You got to pay attention.
Yes.
Because things are, I mean, there's...
And I like that there's stuff in there for the classic Who fans. You know, the storage tanks for the Cybermen. Hmm. I mean, that's a direct callback to Tomb of the Cybermen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you first walk in and there they are all stacked on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, we've seen this before.
Yep.
And this is good.
Yeah. Yeah. So well, I think that one thing that and we actually got a different kind of Cyberman here. We actually got a Cyberman which is more of a puppet species for the Master and ultimately for the
right.
Doctor.
Rather than the real Cyberman.
But at the same time, these were much scarier to me. And on a philosophical level, than say Nightmare and Silver's Cybermen,
right?
Because these are our nightmare. This is the
You think you're going to an afterlife, and then you're not.
You're imprisoned, and you've lost your will. You're a puppet. You're an emotionless puppet, and worse than that, the implication of the Nethersphere. Is that they put you through emotional hell and push you to the point where you willingly delete your own emotions.
Right.
You accept. You're hurting so bad that you just want the pain to end and you're willing to wipe out the one thing that really makes you human.
And that actually...
That's terrifying.
But on the flip side of that,
mm-hmm.
how many people do we know? And this could actually include people that we know really well. In your day-to-day regular routine, how many times have we run across circumstances where it would be nice to have that delete button?
Well, but
just learning not even in the afterlife, but just
Just control your emotions better.
Yeah,
sure. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's not what they're doing here. I know.
But I'm saying it would be nice to be able to flip that switch every now.
Oh yeah. To take away the emotion and think a lot completely logically and rationally and just handle the facts. Sure,
like
of course.
Data, flip that switch.
Flip that switch. Right.
Turn it off.
But yeah, no. I think that. So in a way, this is, and I liked this version. This version of the Cybermen, the unstoppable army of the dead, is a lot more body horror, which is what the Cybermen started out as.
Yeah.
And the idea that there's a in the original series, the Cybermen were basically, they were cyborgs. There was a living, breathing creature underneath.
Well,
that
they were
shell.
That way. They were that way in 9 when they flipped over
that's
to the other
true.
Dimension.
That's true. But I never liked the alternate dimension Cybermen. They just lacked. They didn't. They
weren't menacing enough.
They weren't menacing enough. I mean, it was
the same concept.
They were
though.
Big and imposing.
Yeah, and they were people inside.
But to me, even though we had scenes of body horror in there, it just didn't have the same impact for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Nightmare and Silver came around and we were talking about this being a return to the old Cybermen, and then it was disappointing. This is much more disturbing. And the idea of what they are is that this is the army that the Master made for the Doctor, because there's nobody who needs an army more than someone who thinks they're right.
Yeah.
Because
that was a great line too. Somebody who thinks they're right, And who thinks they're more right than you?
Mm-hmm.
It just really it puts the Doctor in his place, and mm-hmm. that really does sum up a lot of the Doctor's behavior.
Oh, sure.
No matter what incarnation you're looking at, he's always the one in the room who thinks he's right,
mm-hmm.
and you know whether he is or not is immaterial. He's 2,000 years old. He's a Time Lord. Of course, he's right, and that gets thrown back in his face in this episode.
Oh yeah,
from a number of different places, because Danny does it too.
Sure. Well, and I think
in his way, and you know the Master does it, and I don't know really so much that Clara does it in this one, but she has done it before in this season.
She has done it, but she
after
also
after Kill the Moon, especially.
Well, she does it here because when the Doctor is not willing to essentially kill Danny again.
Yeah.
Because, and it's not because he's not willing to get his hands dirty, because the Doctor has killed before. It's because it's going, what it's going to do to Clara, and what it's going to do to his and Clara. I mean, his and Clara's friendship is already rocky enough.
Right.
But is it going to survive him basically killing Danny again in front of her? Him killing Danny again in front of her?
I think intellectually she already understands.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Gone,
well, yeah, but, yeah, but emotionally,
yeah. Stuff, yeah.
And one of the things, you know, the emotions are important. She puts him in his place there when she says, do as you're told. Give me, you know,
right.
So, but it's a different kind of thing. But it's that horrible choice. With an army of Cybermen, the Doctor could go free everyone from the Dalek camps. He could go, you know, he could save the universe with an indestructible army that just replenishes itself.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would ever, you know, he could make everything okay.
Except
by the time
it'd be a
very quiet universe.
Well, and it was, and that actually goes back to the possibility of the Veil Yard.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know, that could be, if he had accepted the army, and mm-hmm. that would have been an interesting twist if he'd done it.
Oh, yeah.
That would be one step closer to the Veil Yard,
mm-hmm.
because is that iteration of this character still a possibility out there? Is he still
according to the Great Intelligence, it is.
So, you know, we've still
got
that.
Name of the Doctor. So yeah, well, and this is the character who you could see it almost happening to because of the anger
mm-hmm.
that's there.
And the swearing.
On
the psychic paper.
On the psychic paper,
That was a nice little Malcolm Tucker.
That was actually a lot
that's
of
what that
that's
was.
A cute little nod of the head there. But it becomes this thing that this whole season has been about looking at the Doctor in a way that isn't necessarily the dramatic action hero that we kind of got. Even though we got a dramatic action hero moment here from flying through the air and dying.
Yeah,
the
tires, that little James Bond moment.
It was a very nice James Bond moment. But it's been about looking at him as a flawed hero,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, of course, is what he's always been.
And that goes back to resetting the character as more of the classic Who character mm-hmm. rather than, like you say, the dashing, sexy action hero romantic
right.
figure who's really tired at this point. You know, we get that every single season with Tennant,
yeah.
and some a little bit, not quite so much with Matt because Amy paired off with Rory.
Yeah, and Matt Smith is always also the cosmic clown. He was very much a callback to the Patrick Troughton years.
Yeah, you know, I saw a little bit of Troughton in Smith's performance, but I think he was even more so of the
sure.
I don't want to be responsible. I'm going to be a teenager for a while and just kind
of which of course came back to bite him a couple of times throughout
right.
his run because he couldn't do it.
But I think this season really, you know, everybody was expecting the search for Gallifrey to be the main arc.
Well,
and
we got a little bit of resolution to that, didn't we?
A little bit, but I think Moffat did a smart thing in making this season more about turning 12 into a classic Doctor
yeah.
and getting the audience to respond to that. Whether you love it or hate it, Capaldi's Doctor is a classic Doctor.
Well, and I think
and the stories work with that.
There's been one of the things that's been very, very interesting is that for all the folks who have been unhappy with this season or this episode or that episode or how it ended, nobody is saying, I don't like Peter Capaldi as the Doctor.
I've seen a few.
I haven't seen, I mean, well, I'm sure there
it's
are.
A, it's a minority, but I have seen a few.
The vast majority of folks are going, Capaldi is amazing.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've said this before in my reviews. I think this is the part he was born to play. Because I've been a huge fan of his since Local Hero, back when he was just starting out as an actor and had no idea what he was doing. There's a great interview with him talking about, hey, he had no clue what he was doing on set. He was just a disaster. And it still manages to work.
I do that every day.
I know, me too. But you look at this, just watch what happened in this episode. He goes from angry to sad to, I mean, he's somebody who's warring with himself. And there's this moment of, you know, because I want to crack a smile. I want to see if your eyebrows fly off. Mm-hmm. And then when he does smile, it's this almost moment of joy in the midst of.
Yeah, when he figures out
he's racking himself. He's been racking himself over the head, ripping his you know, staring into his navel the whole time. And finally, he's like, "I'm making it hard on myself. This is who I am."
Yeah,
you know, I try and help where I can.
Well, and that harkens back to what Clara had said. You know, maybe you're not a good man, but you try.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And really, that is the essence of the Doctor.
Sure.
You know, and sometimes he's not a good man.
No.
But sometimes he can't be.
Right. Sometimes he has to be the monster to save the world.
Yeah. And he's even said that, you know, sometimes it's about, you know, you always have, sometimes you have, all you have are terrible choices, but you still have to choose.
And you have the moment where today on this episode where he takes the Master's weapon, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping
he's about to do
it. He's going
to
do it. He's going to pull the trigger.
Yeah. I think I know what you're going to say. You wanted to see a sonic.
I wanted to see a tissue compressor. I want to see the Delgado Ainley tissue compressor.
Yeah.
But no such luck.
Oh, well. Maybe when she comes back.
Because she's coming back. Well, somebody's comment on the Doctor Who TV thread pointed out that there's an interesting the effect looks off.
Well, I saw a comparison when Cyber Danny shoots the other Cybermen in the chamber.
Yep.
They all blow up.
Yep.
They all explode. They don't disintegrate.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Missy's weapon. That's all red puff of smoke type of an effect. And this last one, when Cyber Brigadier shoots her and she disappears in a blue puff, everybody went, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So the implication, the suggestion is that this is some
possibly
sort of a transport, teleport
well,
effect
rather than
her being shot.
And Moffat pointed out that Anthony Ainley's Doctor died over and over and over again. It kept coming back with an explanation. The explanation was, and then I escaped.
Yes.
You know? And I think that would be fantastic. I think I loved the dynamic between the two characters.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Do you think, because it's established that this is a possibility in both the TV movie with 8 and some of the audio stuff like you were talking about, is it possible that Missy is the Master inhabiting somebody else's body like he did with Bruce the paramedic? Or is this a regeneration of the Master?
Well, or in the case of the Ainley Doctor, he basically took over a person's body as well. Well, I don't. It's a good question, because what we don't actually get this episode, either episode, is an explanation as to how this happened. The regeneration? Fine. We've established, and Moffat has made it very clear, he's established for a while now that Time Lords and gender is not a thing. They don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to be a woman now. You know, I'm going to be a man now. Whatever. And it's been argued by several different showrunners that if doctor's got three heads and 20 tentacles? Well, okay. Nothing that says they can't.
Yeah.
But we don't get an explanation of how he got away from Gallifrey, how he became Missy, what happened there.
He got out of the time lock.
Exactly. So Gallifrey came back, but that
whole thing does that mean that he never got stuck in the time lock with Rassilon and all of those guys at the end of time?
At some point, we're going to get an answer. Whether it's Moffat or the next showrunner, there'll be an explanation. Somebody will do it. Or it'll show up in fiction or whatever.
Well, here's the question, though. Do we need one?
No, not necessarily. Right. And that's actually an old classic Who thing. Because
there he is.
He's back. Right. And now modern audiences might want that explanation. And I think that makes sense because we're used to story arcs built that way where we want the explanation. And that's fine, but you don't necessarily have to have it. Speaking of explanations, we're not going to have.
No.
It's the power of love that saves the day again.
But of course. Because this is Doctor Who, and it's not really science fiction.
No, it's science. It's science fantasy, and Danny's love is the key that makes saving everything possible.
And I would say that also applies to the Brigadier.
It does. It does. And that's this has happened before in several episodes of the series, and you either buy it or you don't.
All this has happened before and will happen again.
That's right.
Oh, wait. That was also a show about...
That's true.
...cybernetic being... Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yep. But you end up with this... If you either accept the fact that love is either the most powerful emotion there is, or it's a promise, as it says here...
Mm-hmm. Which could be both.
And that the best part of us... The thing that saves us again and again and again is how we care, about the people we love.
Yes.
Or you don't. Okay. So this is like, you know, the nebulous emotion thing is what saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing you can't quantify, you think you can't measure. There's no litmus test for love. There's no hard and fast thing that says, you know, if you strip away the emotions of someone,
right,
quote unquote. But it's love. It's real love. What happens? And you look at someone like the Brigadier. The Brigadier has got duty. Even if you were to completely... But at the same time, I can't see the Brigadier pushing the button. You'd be like, well, I'm not pushing this button. That's insane.
Yeah.
Who are you people? But that was duty. The person who would show up and save his child... To save the world, to be there, to take the shot,
yeah.
So the doctor doesn't have to.
And people were saying that it's good that it was a nice connection that the Brigadier is the one who shot the Master because mm-hmm. of the first time they all met.
Oh yeah,
but still, you still have a little bit of the criticism that this cheapens the Brigadier by making him into a Cyberman. I don't know that it does.
No, it doesn't. I think that.
But I think if the actor was still alive, we would have had a completely different.
Oh yeah.
Thing.
Oh yeah.
Going on.
Honestly, if the actor was if he was still alive, you would have had him sit there and he looked over there and the faceplate would have come off, and you would have seen him.
If he were physically capable, he'd still be running unit.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's also true.
He'd be on the plane.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's just I would
love to see what the Brigadier would have done with 12. Because that dynamic, because Brigadier, you know,
he would have looked at him and said, "Have you forgot Sergeant Benton?"
Yeah.
Have you forgotten Mike Yates? They would have had that explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor would have sat there and gone,
yeah.
And the Brigadier would have sat there and said, and if you're talking about soldiers who don't ask questions and blindly follow orders, you're right. However, you have plenty of experience with those who do.
And I'm going to say right now.
Yes.
That I am assuming, since the show has not said one way or the other, I'm assuming that Sarah Jane Smith is still alive in show universe, because I cannot think about cyber Sarah Jane. I'm not going to think about Cyber Sarah Jane.
The implications here, like I said, the implications here are terrifying because so many of the people that we are companions that we are fond of that matter to us in the history of the show. That's actually a scene I wanted that we didn't have, which is the Doctor thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just killing him. Because we got a scene where it was killing him, and it wasn't that. It was Missy telling him where the Gallifrey was.
Yeah, and he went there.
And he went there, and there's nothing there. And you just watch him break down.
And that was such a good scene.
Because he is so, I mean, he's, again, the Doctor is lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And the last, being the last of his kind, has it hurts. Even though, you know, Eleven was, there's that great line in The Doctor's Wife, where House says, you know, fear me, I've killed, you know, hundreds of Time Lords. And he goes, fear me, I've killed them all. That's bravado.
Yeah.
You know, this is somebody who just, he just doesn't want to be.
Well, I think the I've killed them all line not only is bravado, but it's fed by his pain.
Oh, sure.
And it's one of those like.
Oh, yeah. It's self-hate. Again, we come back to the Doctor hates himself. So it's a great scene. I mean, you on one hand, you're like, why are you beating up on the one thing you love most in the universe, which is your ship? But at the same time, he knows that the ship can take it. Mm-hmm. You know, if the ship could, if the TARDIS could wrap him up and hold him at that moment, it would have, because he just comes apart. Which leads directly to the end, where you have these two characters who have become so practiced at lying to each other and themselves. Give each other the O. Henry choice. It's the O. Henry bit.
Yep.
Where I'm giving you the gift that I think you want, and neither one of them wants it. They're both being told,
everything's
going to be okay.
I'm fine.
And they're, he's in pain and she's in pain.
Yeah.
And the only person who can actually understand their real pain at that real moment is the person they're going, no, no. Go off, live your life. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, it's okay.
Hey,
it's
great.
Okay.
You and Danny, that's awesome. So happy you two are together.
Head
I'm
going to
go back home and,
Yeah.
You know, it's,
All right, now.
Yes.
Last thing, we'll wrap up with this. In the beginning of this sequence, in the beginning of these two episodes, they're all the post-it notes.
Yep.
On the wall there with Clara. And she's going to tell him, just say it. Some eagle-eyed people have seen on some of these post-it notes, and a couple of different post-it notes, 3 months.
Yeah.
And now, of course, with Danny being dead,
right?
Everybody is like, well, wait a minute. Orson Pink.
Uh-huh.
Orson Pink.
Yep.
Do you think Clara is pregnant?
I think she probably is. And I think that's what we're going to get the end of the Christmas episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you've watched the Christmas trailer and you don't see Clara in there, some eagle-eyed person sat there and caught a shot that's behind everybody.
Right.
They're pretty sure they picked Clara out of the, like, six people in the shot. If not at the end of the Christmas episode, if she goes into the next season, we don't know. What she has said can be personally through the asked her what's going to happen after Doctor Who. And she gave an answer that is, well, I have to do a little bit of theater, do a little of this. Well, of course she would, whatever work she leaves the show, right?
Yeah. But she could do that in between seasons, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think she's pregnant with Danny's child, because this is going to go on to be that, the time-traveling grandmother, who passes down the soldier.
Yeah.
But
in that episode, though, it was time-traveling grandparents.
Well.
So there is already a little bit of a change.
Well, but Danny's already been, Danny's traveled on the TARDIS.
Well, that's true.
So it's one of those things where we know, and unless they yank it out from underneath us, because they could. Moffat could still kill her.
He could. I don't know that he will.
I don't think so either. I think she's going to leave, and I'd love to see Journey Blue be the next companion. That would be awesome. If we can't have Osgood, then give me Journey Blue, because I think the dynamic there, and I almost think that would almost be the way of the Doctor acknowledging that it's time to put that behind him. The soldier, the view of the both his personal experience as a soldier and his view as a soldier, and maybe set that aside a little bit.
You know what might be a little bit more interesting is Shapeshifter Osgood as a companion. Because we haven't had an alien companion for a long time.
Well, that would actually go back, and since they've made the Doctor Who, if they did Absalom Dak canon, for Frobisher the Penguin, the shape shifting penguin from the Doctor Who comics, it would be a nice little tip of the hat to having a shape shifting companion.
Yeah, but so many people want Osgood to be a companion.
Oh, sure,
but it would be.
There's actually a precedent for a shape shifting companion who wasn't Chameleon, who was a very, very expensive broken prop. there's a flashback for you, folks. Chameleon, Fifth Doctor, look it up. But no, I mean, it's just, again, perfect season? No. Uneven season? Yes. Great character development for everything? Great performances?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this season did what it set out to do.
Oh, sure.
Which is establish a classic Doctor and bring all of the new Whovians kicking and screaming into this is the way it is because this Doctor is like the old Doctors.
Sure.
Not necessarily in age, but the past Doctors before the revival, and get used to it because he's here for a while,
right?
Which I think is great. I love Capaldi as the Doctor. I think 12 is brilliant. I love the fact that he's, you know, brought into his performance various different aspects of past incarnations. So he's not just playing 12. He's playing 12 channeling
he's
4
kind
channeling
of playing
2
a blend he's playing all of everybody.
Them. Yeah, and I like because there was an interview that he had done after the season was done shooting but before everything came in where he was talking about how he changed up his performance. You know, he didn't want to do the same thing over and over and over again and get into a habit and get into a rut.
I think that's
what you're seeing.
You can very much see that.
Yeah, so I would love to see, speaking of caretakers, I would love to see 12
go up against Baker.
No, I'd love to see him meet him.
Oh yeah,
meet the curator.
Oh yeah, that would be fun
just a scene.
Well, especially because the moments where he drops his voice down and he's doing Tom Baker. That would have been a lot of fun.
It would be.
But apparently, Tom Baker had a really, really hard time physically with that shoot.
Did he?
That's what I hear. And so the odds of him coming back and doing another on screen, because I guess it was physically it was difficult for him. Because he's not a young man anymore.
No. I mean, he didn't really have to do very much, but I can see, you know,
shooting schedules. For the folks who don't know, that little scene, which is what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes long?
If that.
That's a day. That's easy a day.
At least.
And that can be very, very trying on the youngest and fittest of people, let alone somebody who's been acting for since the 60s.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I just worked on a web pilot here. It was 12-hour days.
Yeah.
And I'm only 44, and I was wiped out
by
the end of it. It's like, really? And I didn't really have to do much.
Right. But it can be very tiring.
Yeah,
so,
it can be.
So that's it's unfortunate, but it's only to be expected, I think.
So what are we going to expect out of the next season, do you think?
Brand new slate. We're going to get past the Christmas special with Nick Frost as Santa Claus.
I know, that was so fun. I was like, oh, of course he is.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm coming in. That was great. And and the look on the Doctor's face is like, seriously?
I still want to see Sean Pertwee as 3.
I do too. Did you see his Halloween costume?
I did, on Instagram.
My God. Oh, that is so fantastic.
I saw that and I went,
he looks so good.
He does.
I would love that. That would be great. But he said he doesn't want to do that.
And that's a shame.
I mean, dressing up for Halloween is one thing, but playing his dad, because it's his dad's thing. I get it. But at the same time, if you had to do it, Patrick Troughton's son
is going to be in the Christmas special.
In the Christmas special.
So not playing the second.
No. But still, I love that they're bringing back some of these characters, some of these actors who have come back in the show. And
I would hope.
Real sense of continuity.
With Pertwee, I would hope that if Moffat ever came up with a multi-doctor thing that included 3 and the story was good enough.
Oh, yeah.
I would hope that he'd sit there and say, okay, I'm the only one who can do it.
I would think so.
Because he would.
I think he would. If there was a reason. Because it would be fun to play the doctor who's dressed, whose clothes are inspired by 3, playing off of 3.
Because you could bring back a number of doctors. in a big multi thing, which is what everybody was hoping to get in the 50th.
Sure.
And we didn't get.
No, so but we got the five. We got the five-ish doctors.
Yeah.
Which is great. All right, I think this is overall. I think I'm pleased with the season. I really love Capaldi.
Yeah,
I've been very happy for Clara's development this season. She actually, for all the folks who were complaining about how she had no character last season, she had all the character this season. I think it worked well. Next season, your past Christmas special, and next season's wide open. It's a whole new game.
Yeah,
we've transitioned to Capaldi's doctor, who is funny and dark and. Doesn't like to give hugs because it hides your face.
That was a good line.
It's a very good line.
Moffat can be a good writer.
He can be a very good writer. Yeah. So, fun stuff.
As is our show.
We think so.
And because next week is wide open for us, too. So
that's right.
We'll have to figure out what next we're going to talk about. If you would like to give us your comments on the finale of Doctor Who or Season 8 in general or any other topic that we talk about here, you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. You can leave us a comment over at scififorme.com, which is where we post these. If you are listening to this because somebody shared the show with you and said, hey, you might be interested in these guys, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and DoubleTwist and OneCast and Stitcher and Blueberry. Another service that you can get us on. And don't forget also, we've got other podcasts. We have Level 117, which talks about all the Marvel stuff. We have the new Rogues Gallery, which talks DC, and the Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast, where the ladies of the site all get together and talk about various random things. So we've got all of those podcasts available you can listen to. And don't forget also, you can connect with us on all of the social media. Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, Tumblr, YouTube, Google+,
all the things, and don't forget to if you have not yet, which you should have at the break, head over to superherostuff.com.
Yes, absolutely. Purveyors of fine licensed merchandise, they are.
They are,
and we do appreciate their sponsorship, their partnership with us, and that's going to do it for us. We're going to wrap up. Timothy Harvey.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Jason Hunt, and we will be back next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.